Elliot Friedman is a presentation of Grip Auto and Tire, and he joins us every Tuesday here on the People's Show. Thanks for this, Elliot. We were just reminiscing. It's 2 years today from the JT Miller trade, and I guess the last time the hockey world kind of got together here in, well, maybe the 2020 All-Star game, but it's been a while since that's kind of happened.
You know, it's so funny. I remember that trade because the PK Subban deal was going down at the same time. And I was trying to figure out where Subban was going, and that was the one from Nashville to Jersey. And someone said to me, check with Vancouver. They're making a trade. So I walked over to their table, and I interrupted Benning, actually. And he looks at me like he's obviously in the middle of something. And he looks at me, and he's like, what? And I said, PK Subban, is he going to you? And he looked at me funny, and he goes, no. And I said, okay. But right at the same time, he was filling, basically working on the paperwork to close the JT Miller deal. So it's just kind of funny in retrospect. I was going to see if he'd dealing for Subban, and I basically tripped over the fact that he was dealing for Miller, and I completely missed it in the moment. It was just dumb miss of a scoop. It still bothers me. Thanks for bringing up such a sensitive topic, Dan.
So you're more bothered by that than Canucks fans were at the time about the Canucks trading a conditional first round pick for him.
Yeah, that's probably true. you know, you always remember the stories you miss, right, Seth?
Right. No, it's true. We know that one too well. And, you know, as far as the Canucks are concerned, I mean, some news today, right? I mean, yeah. The Sedins, they make the announcement about them coming in as special advisors. And, you know, we've had mixed reviews. A lot of fans are excited about it, talk about the credibility to have these guys join the organization. Others call it a PR play, but I don't think, now that we talked about this in the past, but I don't think, Elliot, these guys are coming in here and just to kind of be cheerleaders. Like, you know, they had a pretty good say in what they wanted to do here, and they took their time to take this role and really define what it was going to be.
Well, first of all, I think those guys are coming in with their eyes wide open. And number one, because they're not stupid. And number two, because they have a good lay of the land of what's happened there. Right? Over the last few years. We know they have a good relationship with Lyndon. I have no doubt they spoke to him about what happened and how he saw things unfolding and what they learned from him. And, you know, I think the other thing too is that, you know, the Sedins, you know, with JP Barry and Pat Brisson, like those guys are going to protect them. You know, you don't think that they weren't saying you should be looking out for this. You should be asking this question. We should have this kind of language. Technically, I don't know if they're allowed to actually negotiate on their behalf because I'm not sure that they can represent them at this time. But obviously, they're friends. They've known each other for a long time, and they would certainly, you know, give them their opinions on what they think. The Sedins aren't going into this unaware of everything that's happened and unaware of a good lay of the land and without protecting themselves in terms of what they want to do and how things are going to work around them. I think to me the most interesting thing is going to be a year from now, how do they feel? Do they like this? Do they want to commit themselves more to this? Or do they look at it in a year and say, you know what, we're perfectly happy doing what we're doing, and we don't want to go past this? That, to me, is going to be one of the biggest questions as this evolves, is do they decide, one or both of them decide, you know what, I really want to do this full-time. I want to be a GM, or I want to be a president of hockey operations. That to me is going to be the biggest evolving story of this decision.
Well, isn't that kind of the big question a lot of these guys have to ask? Like, you see it with Luongo, Steve Yzerman, certainly, you know, when he started working with the Red Wings, he quickly graduated and you started to see him grow and his reputation grow. Same for Chris Drury with the New York Rangers. I mean, if if they're into this and they want to commit to the 24/7 type job that it is to take one of those big roles on, you gotta have the realization that it's going to be essentially your life.
You know, Dan, I remember a story I was told about Yzerman, and it was a guy who was a bit of a longtime GM, and it was at a time, you'll remember, where a lot of former players were jumping into it and getting big jobs right away. And he remembers when Yzerman got hired in Detroit initially before he went to Tampa, he said, oh, another one. And he wanted to hate Yzerman. He said he really did. And then he started seeing Yzerman. And you know how, I mean, you can only imagine how much money that guy has in the bank. He had some young kids still at the time. And he would go to like these dingy arenas and he'd see Steve Yzerman there. And he'd go to some ridiculous tournament and he'd see Steve Yzerman there. And he told me, he said, I really wanted to hate that Steve Yzerman got this job, but then I realized he was putting in the work. And if you want to do this job well, that's what you have to do. And the biggest challenge for former players, especially of this generation who made a lot more money, is, you know, it's a lot of work. You have to go and do things that you don't want to do. I mean, I remember years ago when Brian Burke was the general manager in Anaheim, calling him about something, and it was in the middle of winter, and like he was walking and he was huffing and puffing, and I could hear this whooshing of wind right around me, and I'm like, where are you? And he goes, I'm walking to a game at the University of Denver. And I remember looking at the weather and it was like it was a snowstorm as he was going to that game. And, you know, that's what the job is. And I don't begrudge the people who don't want to do it. You know, the Sedins made a lot of money in their careers. They're family people. I mean, you guys don't need me to tell you that. It's very easy to say, you know what? I'm half in and I'm half out. I'm comfortable. I'm happy to give my opinion, but I really don't want to do everything that it really involves. And, you know, I think the GM job now is basically two jobs. One is running your hockey and the other is managing your people. And both of those have become very important. Obviously the explanation of the hockey stuff, you don't need it, but managing your people to maximize your organization, I think everybody realizes that's where the Canucks have had a lot of problems. So, you know, you have to be able to do both of those things well. Those are two full-time jobs, you know, basically for one person. And, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see Daniel and Henrik, is that what they – do they want to commit to this? Where do they look in a year and say, yes, I'm all in, I want to do more, or no, we've seen what this is, we're happy with the role we have.
Elliot Friedman is our guest, the Hockey Night in Canada and 31 Thoughts, the podcast. And on that pod with Jeff Merrick, and I know you said this to us as well here on Sportsnet 650, Elliot, that the Canucks, they kind of know how the fans felt about this season. They spoke very loudly. They also know how the organization kind of handled everything that happened. And they had a clear kind of plan here to address those things. And one thing Eddie Lack mentioned to us, who was on with us about an hour ago, was when Trevor was there, there was a certain aura he brought. There was a certain credibility and respect he brought. And it was a guy that could kind of relate to the players. And he was kind of there as a buffer that helped out. The Canucks didn't have that without Linden. We all know how thin the front office was. The Sedins can really help out in that regard, too. How much of this do you think is also kind of addressing culturally a change within the organization?
Oh, I think it's a huge part of it. I do. And that's why I said the GM job now is basically finding players and managing your people. And there's no question that that's a big thing there. I mean, look, I mean, the other thing here, too, is their longtime agent, J.P. Barrie, CAA, you know, CAA has their two top players. They have Pettersson and they have Hughes. You know, it's not irrelevant. I don't think it's the reason the Sedins are there, but it doesn't hurt. It really doesn't hurt. And, You know, those guys, you know, you remember their last game in Edmonton. Man, you guys know the Canadian fans, they hate the other teams. All these fan bases, they cannot stand each other. Like, everybody talks about, oh, the last Canadian team standing, is it Canada's team? We're tribal, okay? They either love the Canadians or they're hate watching the Canadians right now. You either want them to win or you really want them to lose. But the Sedins are one of the few, they overcome that. You remember that last game in Edmonton, the big ovation they got? People respect them. People look at them in a almost uniformly positive way. And, you know, when they walk into that room or they have something to say or someone says, I'd like to hear what they have to say, people are going to listen. And, you know, I look at it and I think they'll have input in a lot of things that needed to have input last year. And I can't help but look at the big picture of the agency that represented them for all those years, representing Pettersson and Hughes, and I can't help but think that that's a positive thing for the organization too.
Elliot Friedman, our guest on the podcast that dropped, you talked about Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and you mentioned it on Saturday in headlines. Now, Vancouver was one of the teams that he okayed last year, and we know that the deal fell apart. Arizona didn't like the pieces Vancouver was offering.
I think a lot of it fell apart over Demko, to be honest.
Right. So that was the piece that Arizona had to have in the deal.
Yes, I do believe that Demko was what they wanted, and Vancouver, quite rightly, wasn't really crazy about doing that. Now, I think that Vancouver and Arizona had some frustrations in dealing with each other. I don't know who's right and who's wrong there. But I've been told that one of the pieces that Arizona really wanted was Demko, and the Canucks were like, we're not doing that.
Do you think the Canucks revisit that at all?
I think you do just because you make the call. I just don't see, like, do you guys see a path there for the Canucks to be able to do this?
Not really.
Yeah. I mean, I don't either. I don't see it. I mean, I'm sure they will talk, but I'm sure they'll talk because I think they know that Ekman-Larsson would love to be here. It just doesn't seem like a fit, especially when you look at some of the salary decisions that the Canucks are going to have to make in the next few years.
I mean, the only way it could work is if you're moving Schmidt somehow, and even then you're talking about adding. So here's the thing. Schmidt's owed $20 million remaining on his contract. Oliver Ekman-Larsson's owed $45 million remaining on his contract.
Yeah.
So,
and there's
a
bonus.
That's
a lot
of money. Yeah.
There's a bonus, you know, and that's a good point, Seth, because, you know, the Schmidt thing, you know, I'm not sure where that's going to go this offseason. You know, I guess it comes down to who would you rather have, Schmidt or Ekman-Larsson?
Probably Schmidt.
At that money difference, the cap hit being bigger and everything too?
And the term. Yeah. I could see it. Yeah.
That's kind of the thing with Ekman-Larsson. Like, I just... his value has taken such a hit. The contract is so large. It's a big risk for a team betting on a bounce back to take that contract on. Like, I can't imagine Arizona's getting a lot of great assets out of that player right now.
Well, I think also what Arizona wants is futures, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're going to strip it down and they're going to start over, and they need young, they need picks and prospects. You know, I think that, I just don't know how much Vancouver's going to have. Arizona's going to try to lever it as much as they can. Now, I think you're right, Dan. I think a lot of what you say is the perception. I do think there are teams out there who believe that with a change of scenery, he will be a better player. But that doesn't mean you aren't going to try to just make the best possible deal you can and make it hard on the Coyotes. I mean, I think the Coyotes are going to have a few pieces out there. I think Kessel's going to be out there. I think Garland's out there. I'm very curious to see what they do with Kemper. I think they feel they will be able to get something for him. So, like, it's not just OEL that they're going to be trying to put out there. So maybe if depending on what else they think they can do, they just say, you know what, we'll try to move the money so that, you know, we maybe don't get as much in return for him as we would for some other players. But I think that's what they're looking at. I do think there's teams out there, Dan, who believe that Ekman Larson in a fresh start is going to be a much different and much better player.
Elliot Friedman is our guest here on Sportsnet 650. And, you know, for as much as we talk about Oliver Ekman-Larsson and we talk about Seth Jones and all these other defensemen that may or may not be available for the Canucks, it really does seem, though, that if they're going to make one big move, it is to kind of add another play-driving top six forward here. We talked about the Sam Reinhart thing, but is that kind of the sense here with the Canucks that their priority is to add another forward here to push the pace?
I do think they're going to try to do that, yes. I think your division's going to be really interesting next year. You're going to have Vegas. You're going to have a Kings team that is determined to have a big off season. But, there's some weird situations there. I mean, who knows what San Jose is going to be? Who knows what Anaheim's going to be? I think they're going to try to hit a home run too. God only knows what Seattle's going to be. I'm really curious to see what Calgary does this off season. You know, Vegas is going to be really good. You know, Edmonton's going to be going for it, but you know, there's a lot of unknowns there. And, you know, there's one thing that Benning said this year that's kind of stuck with me all season long. And that is that, you know, we didn't think that we were planning for the Pacific Division, right? So it was almost as if they were saying they thought they could take advantage of the Pacific Division. Well, I'm looking at the Pacific Division right now, and I realize we're still early in the off season. Still doesn't look that strong.
Yeah.
So if Vancouver's sitting here and saying that last year, you've got to think they're thinking about that again this year, don't you? So what do you think that they're – I think they're going to go out, and they're going to try to add. I do. I think they're going to try to say, look, we don't think this division's very strong, and we're going to try to go for it a little bit here. I don't think they're going to go all in with a crazy move, but I think they're going to look for bargains and look for smart pickups where they can add, you know, maybe a forward and possibly a defenseman. I don't see them holding still. I see them as a team that says, we're going in this division, and we think we're better than a lot of teams are in it.
Friend of the show, Shane O'Brien, reported that Matthew Tkachuk may not be the happiest camper in Calgary.
Yeah.
Do you have anything on that?
I do. The thing, I got lots of denials on that one. And the reason that I put some stock in it is, you know, this offseason, Seth Jones, like a lot of people around Seth Jones, were not happy to talk about it, and they weren't happy it got out, but they didn't deny it. Dougie Hamilton, some people were not happy it got out, but nobody denied it. Ekman Larson, again, people not thrilled it got out, but nobody denied it. This one, I've had people just flat out say that's not the case. So, you know, it's the time of the year where, you know, a lot of stuff flies out there. And that was a hard year last year in Calgary. But I have had a lot of people saying to me that's not the case, where in other situations this year, people may have been, I'm mad that I knew, but they weren't saying it was false.
Elliot, before we let you go, wanted to just kind of get an update on what you mentioned about Travis Hamonic over the weekend, that he is open to playing anywhere, not just Vancouver. How big a gap do you think there might be here between him and the Canucks, and what kind of market there might be out there for him as a right-hand defenseman?
Well, I think that, you know, I think the Canucks and Hamonic are working at it. I do think there's interest in bringing him back, and I do think they're trying to see if there's, like, all I'd heard was that there'd been some movement. I just don't know how to categorize that set. Things change a lot in these days, and I think the Canucks and the agent are trying. I just, don't know if it's going to get done. I think there's a decent market for him. Like, this is a guy who last summer, before you guys signed him, there were several teams that tried to get him. And Philly tried to take him out east. And as you know, at the deadline, Carolina wanted to take him out east. So I think there is interest. It's hard to find right-hand shots. And, you know, he did a pretty decent job playing with Hughes last year. So, and, you know, people noticed that. So I think there is a market for him. You know, I had some people say to me, like, why don't you just take like 1% of the deal because you're upping his leverage? And I kind of just laughed at that. I said, look, it's a story. This guy has limited himself to Western Canada the last few years, and now I'm hearing he's willing to go elsewhere. Whether you like it or not, it's a story. I do think the Canucks and him are trying. I'd hate to say what the gap is. I'd heard there'd been some movement. That's the only thing I'd heard. But, you know, I do think there are some other teams out there interested. Right-hand shot guys who play a bit of an edgy game, there's always going to be room for those guys.
Elliot, who do you go with tonight, Leonard or Marc-Andre Fleury?
You know, I got to tell you, Dan, I have been wrong the last couple of games. So, you know, I'm probably like some insider I am on this one. If I was coaching, I would start Leonard, but I have this weird feeling they're starting Fleury.
Interesting. That's what Eddie Lack said as well. So maybe both of you are right. Appreciate it. We'll be watching. Thanks.
All right, guys. Have yourselves a good night.